Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This is going to be a little bit different. I am reposting a show that my friends have done, Jim and Angie at Victorious Libertas. They have been doing some excellent reporting on a woman who is trying to keep her children safe. And they interviewed their attorney and their psychologist, Dr. Carol Lieberman, who's very well known in her own right, to talk about their side of the story, or her side of the story. Her name is Melody Bannister. This is what freedom of speech is all about, is allowing people to be able to tell their side of the story. They interviewed two really good professionals. I listened to the whole show, and I can't see anything wrong with this. I think it's such a great interview and really good journalism. And this particular interview caused Daily Motion to delete their entire account. And it's very disturbing that an interview like this would cause that. So I am going to air this in its entirety. I'm going to do it on my podcast and on YouTube. And I ask YouTube, please let me know if you're planning on deleting this. Please educate us on what's wrong with this interview, because I think it's absolutely fabulous. It's exactly what freedom of speech should be for, allowing people to have a voice and to share their side of the story. These are two professional people who they're talking to. It's not vulgar. It's not hurting anybody. I think it's a great show. So please let me know what you think. Make a comment below. Also follow them. They're on BitChute. They do great work. So follow them on BitChute and give them some their support, because this particular person, Melody Bannister, really does, and others that they follow really do need our support and really need a voice out there. And before we get into this really important interview, I've been doing a lot of updates on the virus, and I've been posting really important articles. I just posted one on practical tips that you can do to be financially prepared for the virus. And go to my website, sarahwestall.com, and look at all these different articles. Also, many people are asking about the new C60 black seed oil with curcumin. It's called C60 Complete. You can get that on my website as well. Under shop, there is a coupons are there. And also my patrons get a further discount, a 10% discount off of that as well. So you can sign up for Patreon at patreon.com/Sarah Westall. And you can get discounts on C60 and much more. So let's get into this really important interview that Jim and Angie from Victorious Libertas does with Melody Bannister's attorney and their child's psychologist.
Good morning and welcome to VLTV. Jim prepared a video yesterday talking about the heartbreaking case of a mother who found out her children were being allegedly horribly abused by a family member. And when she went to the authorities to report the abuse, her nightmare began. There was no real investigation to speak of done into those allegations. So Melody Bannister, desperate to protect her children, ran for their lives. She and the children were away from home for over 8 months before being apprehended last week. Now, there are a lot of things to consider in this case. So here with us today to give us a better understanding are Sam McClure, who is the attorney for Melody, and Dr. Carol Lieberman, who is a highly regarded medical doctor, forensics expert, author, and psychiatrist who has interviewed Melody and the children. So let's see what the experts have to say about Melody Bannister. Welcome to our show, and thank you so much for being here, Sam McClure and Dr. Carol Lieberman. So let's start with the present. Melody is currently being held where she was apprehended, which is Hendricks County Jail in Indiana. Sam, from a legal standpoint, what is Melody looking at here? Will she be extradited to Virginia, and what will happen then?
Yeah, that's a good question. So that's the next logical step, is for her to be extradited to Virginia and answer the charges of child abduction or whatever the Stafford County law enforcement has charged her with. In reality, she was just protecting her children from really nasty bad guys. So I think, you know, her objective right now is to not be extradited because she has, in my opinion, credible fears of being harmed if she's incarcerated within Stafford County, Virginia. So I think probably currently right now she has a criminal defense attorney that we've secured for her in Hendricks County, Indiana, to try to start advocating for her and her interests within that locale in Indiana.
Great. Well, that sounds like a good thing. She did indicate to us this morning when we spoke that she was scared of being harmed. How can a mother be charged with kidnapping her own children?
Yeah, from a legal basis.
Yeah, so from a legal basis, once Melody became irrefutably convinced that what her children were telling her was true, right? Like, my kids aren't making this up. It's not wild fantasies. Like, kids don't make up this kind of horrific abuse. Kids just don't. So once she became convinced of that, like you said, she went to Child Protective Services. She went to law enforcement, got no traction. So she did what any rational mother would do, and she fled. She found herself in Alabama. That's when I began to represent her. She planned on setting up permanent residence here, enrolled her kids in homeschool. While she was on the run, husband, the alleged abuser, went to the Stafford County court system without any legal notice to the mom and lied to the court, basically, is what Melody's perspective is. Told lies, allegedly, I have to put that allegedly. And the Stafford County court ordered that the children be returned to the husband, that Melody submit to a mental evaluation, which in the way I read it was Melody needs to go to a crazy house. And so the court did all that without hearing Melody's side of the story. So that's really troubling.
Yes,
obviously,
yes.
Melody did not submit to that court order. And as a consequence, the U.S. Marshals began to look for her.
Wow.
Yeah. Sam, how did you get involved in the case in the first place?
Yeah, there are some. So as Melody fled for her life and her children's lives, she fell into some really kind-hearted people's spheres of influence that try to help women in these situations. This is, it really is a shocker to my conscience. I've had to get personal counseling that the darkness that this case is exposing me to, but it's exposing me to a lot more. But this is actually a really common problem. It's a really common problem even within quote Christian church, maybe especially within the Christian church where there are communities of people that think it's okay to push out accountability and I'm your mediator between you and God. These things seem to grow up in those kind of communities. So I think I got involved because somebody was looking for an attorney to begin to represent Melody's interests. This is not something that I have a background in, interestingly. My main law firm is in adoption, foster care, orphan care, child custody issues. And so I wish there were a better attorney out there representing Melody, honestly, but by God's grace, doing the best I can and learning a lot on the fly.
So tell us about the court hearing where Dr. Carroll flew from California and you had reports and you had evidence to show the judge and none of that was heard.
Yeah. So in this kind of case, it's you know, just like you're in a foxhole, you've got a battle plan, but shrapnel's being blown up all around you, gunfire. So things are happening really fast. So Carol, so gracious to fly in from Los Angeles. She's there. We have prepared tons of evidence to present to the court. You know, basically telling the court, please keep jurisdiction of this case, court in Alabama. Please maintain this protection from abuse order. Please protect Melody and the kids from this abusive situation. We've got Carol Lieberman, world-renowned expert, has done a forensic report interviewing the kids for hours and hours and coming to the conclusion that what the kid says is reliable. We've had other experts that have said Melody's not crazy. We've evaluated her mental health. She's totally sane, right? So we have all this evidence that we want to put in front of the court. Carol's there to testify. Melody has a couple friends that come to court that would be willing to testify. And very oddly, the court does not hear any of that testimony. The court says, well, something's going on in Virginia. We're just going to defer to that. I fought back against that as far as I could before the court threatened to put me in contempt of court. So the court said, if you say one more word about that, I'm going to hold you in contempt. And so very odd. We're appealing on those grounds. I think that's totally improper. But I think that'll get worked out in the long run.
Wow. So Dr. Carroll.
Hi, Dr.
The words mentally unstable have been thrown around an awful lot in this case. Is Melody mentally unstable? Do you know?
Yes, I think I know. And of course, you know, I saw her and examined her, as Sam was saying, in August. And I actually have just spoken to her a couple of days ago. But, and she, under the circumstances, she seems amazingly well-balanced. You know, but obviously all these months on the run were hard on her and hard on the kids. You know, one thing that just on the face of it, you don't have to be a psychiatrist to think about how if, you know, there's all this questioning. I mean, it's been really frustrating. I'm sure Sam can echo that. Just from my point of view, I have done everything right. Just to backtrack. I came down to I spoke with them on the phone by Skype before I came to Alabama. I didn't mention anything about the abuse. It was just an introduction call. Then I spent a whole day, 9 hours, with the family, which included individually speaking with each of the children and doing it in the proper protocol for a forensic psychiatric evaluation of child abuse, and that is with a videotape and with sexually anatomically correct dolls and not suggesting any answers, the whole thing, and wrote a report, 23 pages, and followed it up not long after with a supplemental report. And it's just been an amazing and really discouraging ride in terms of how people want to ignore all of these things. I mean, Melody and her children were ignored from day one. One of the things that needs to be clear is that this is not, you know, people hear custody. This is not like a divorce and custody case. They weren't getting divorced. They had separated. It was custody in terms of who has possession of the children, you know, in their possession. But they were not listened to. She did she did what every mother would think you're supposed to do if your child tells you that you're abused and you believe them in more than one child. And it was so hard for them to eventually tell her, you know, they, just like most children, are afraid to tell their parents or to tell, you know, an authority. In this case, part of it was because they were threatened with that the abusers would kill their mother. And the abusers being notably their father, William Bannister, and they allegedly, yes, everything I say, allegedly, yeah. And their grandfather, J. Tull Bannister. So that was part of it, that they were scared that they would be putting her in danger. And currently they are very scared about that. But she did the right thing. She took them to the police, and the detective, J.G. Wright, and the CPS or DSS worker, Jennifer Dudley, they only talked to them for like less than 20 minutes, and they decided that it was just the kids' imagination and they weren't going to do anything. Well, actually, the police officer said he was going to do an investigation, but that really turned out to be nothing. And so then Melody took the children on a planned vacation to West Virginia. The father had decided at the last minute that he didn't want to go. And after the vacation, she called the police again. She called Detective Wright again. And he didn't really, you know, clearly he hadn't done much of an investigation. And then when she tried calling again, he wouldn't take her calls. So she was checking to see if it was safe for them to come home, which it obviously wasn't, because now the father and grandfather know that she reported this.
Yes.
And they couldn't come home. So that's why they've been on the run for all these months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's unfortunate that they were caught before we could legally get them protected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Go ahead.
No, I was, so you interviewed the children, and so you found that it wasn't just an over imaginative children, right? This is something that they just couldn't have or wouldn't have made up.
Right. Not an overactive imagination. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I have been an expert for almost 30 years, and I've done lots of cases. I don't just do child abuse, but I've done lots of cases of child abuse, like the lead cases in Los Angeles against the church, you know, the lead cases of abuse. in other cases as well. So I am able to tell whether children are making this up. And also you have to look at, this is what I was starting to say before, you also have to look at why children would make something up. Now, if it's divorce and custody, you know, a lot of times, whether it's the mother saying that they were abused or the father or whatever, there's a reason, and it's to usually to get custody away from the other parent. But that wasn't the case here. And they had a nice life, other than being abused. They had a nice life in Stafford. They had a nice home. They had a pool. They had nice schools. There was no reason other than abuse for why they would have wanted to leave all that and go running around the country, you know, not knowing where their next meal was coming, depending upon the kindness of strangers.
Yeah. So are either of you familiar with, or do you believe this case could be satanic ritual abuse?
Yeah, I can speak to that. I mean, I think whether it's overtly satanic or not, I don't know. I don't think that's been alleged, but I think the God of darkness and the God of this world loves to abuse children, loves to kill, steal, and destroy. So in that sense, I think, yes, I think it has gone under the cover, like I said before, of, quote, church leadership,
people,
you know, pedophiles posing as Christian leaders, and pushing out accountability. So, you know, that's another real layer of sadness here.
Yeah, I just, in one of the blogs that I read, it talked about animal sacrifices in front of the children. And so that's textbook SRA. We've done a lot of interviews on that. Didn't she have a protective order? And then it got overturned
in Alabama.
Right. So in Alabama, so a PFA is the acronym commonly used for protection from abuse. If you know, if a woman's getting harassed or beaten by a boyfriend or a husband, that's the mechanism. You can get, generally you can get what's called an ex parte protection from abuse order. Ex parte means only one party. And so if you just go to court and allege credible things that you're being abused, the court will automatically issue this order and say, okay, I'm going to issue this order. I've only heard one side, but we're going to have a hearing as soon as possible. And so the court did issue that order. We had protection from abuse. We had covering, but at that hearing is when the husband showed up and the court deferred to the Virginia court order.
Okay. So he showed up, but she wasn't there at that point?
She didn't show up. And really, it was at my advice. My advice, I said, look, these are really nasty bad guys. I'm afraid that you park your car and you start walking into the court building, you're going to get abducted.
Mm-hmm.
Really, things are going to happen to you and the kids. And so, you know, I told the court in the hearing, my client's not here, but we could have her here in 5 minutes. But it, at the end of the day, it was my advice and fear for her safety.
And then at that point, they did the 180. They gave the children to the father. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's correct.
And then did not give her the mother visitation after that. Is that correct?
Wait. They agreed to the Virginia order that would theoretically give the father custody, you know, of them. But she was not, since she wasn't there, since that was, you know, good foresight on Sam's part, she wasn't there, so she couldn't have been, like, they weren't physically there to then go into the father's possession. But that comes later in the story. This story gets worse and worse and worse. You know, when I tell people the story, they don't believe it. If this were a movie, I think, you know, it wouldn't do very well because people would say, oh, that's ridiculous. How could that happen? And I think it's important for people to wake up to the fact that these kinds of things are happening. And there are mothers, you know, and children out there who are getting this kind of treatment. But to talk about how this, so they were still safe in the sense that they could still go around to these safe houses. But then she got caught. And Sam can describe the conditions. Well, I actually spoke to Melody about it too. The conditions, I'll just say the conditions of how she got arrested were so you wouldn't think that would happen in America. Or maybe I'm naive. I wouldn't have thought that that would happen in America. So violent. They broke the window of her car. She wasn't like resisting arrest. I mean, how do you resist? She's in the car with her four kids. Mm-hmm. Resist arrest. But still they broke the window. Sam, you correct me if I leave out something or say something that's not correct in retelling this story, but she said there were 20 marshals or, you know, law officers of some type pointing machine guns at them. Now, I mean, you know, it's bad enough for Melody, but imagine the children who have been traumatized. I diagnosed them with PTSD and other things. And so they were already in very, very fragile. And then they get arrested under these kinds of circumstances. I mean, that was totally unnecessary. What, did they think that the kids had guns? Yeah. I mean, so then Melody was pushed down on the ground and she was taunted by the Sheriff Wright and a marshal. And then the kids were put into foster care. And here's the part where it is, you know, as I said, it gets worse and worse. They were put into foster care temporarily with a family. And but very quickly, the father came down to Indiana to take them back. And very quickly, the Child Protective Services said that they interviewed them. But and Sam had said that it was for 5 hours. You can... but clearly the kids who have just been, you know, gone through this trauma with the guns and the police and all of that, they're not going to start talking about their abuse when they know that their abusers threatened them to hurt them, to hurt their mother. They're not going to go into all kinds of details. So the Indiana Child Protective Services use that, the fact that the girls only talked about dreams and so on, not real memories, as a basis for thinking that either they were making it up or that this really wasn't serious. However, two of the girls, the eldest two girls, talked about having suicidal ideation, or somehow they knew that they were suicidal, which is totally, would have been totally expected from what I knew of them when I was examining them, because they were so terrified of being caught and then having to face their abusers after having told. So they sent two girls to the hospital in Indianapolis, and the hospital let them go in 3 hours. Now, unless there are strange laws, and we're going to look into this, but unless there are strange laws in Indianapolis, you can't, if a person expresses any kind of suicidal ideation, you have to keep them for 72 hours.
72 hours, yeah.
And instead, not only didn't they keep them, but they gave them to their father, the abusers, to take them back. So
the children are with dad right now?
Well, no, they're with a friend of dad's. I don't know. Sam, do you know the details of how they went from dad's to this friend who is really not that much better, because she would definitely be intimidated by the father and grandfather to give them access? But how did that happen, that they got to this other person?
Yeah, I think what Carol has said, that fiction is stranger than reality. And I don't know that you would believe this in a movie, but as you know, one of the bedrocks of the American legal system is that clients should have access to an attorney.
Yeah.
I have been denied access to the children, and that's really concerning to me. So what we know is a little murky, and I'm working hard to resolve that, you can rest assured. But I think Hendricks County in Indiana, the Child Protective Services, really gave a good faith effort to try to do the right thing. I think a really hot potato landed in their lap. I think they did, you know, they did the interview with two people. As Carol has spoke about, we don't think they did everything correctly. And definitely, I think at the end of the day, releasing the children to the father was a big mistake. That's a little bit inconceivable to me with the depth of allegations against the father, the credibility of the allegations, why you would release them to the father. I mean, wouldn't they be safer on a Greyhound bus with strangers?
Yeah.
So that's really perplexing. But I think, you know, we need to throw Hendricks County under the bus. There's a lot of things they were trying to do right. I know that the younger two kids were transported with a friend, and the older two were with the father, and they should be in the custody of a friend. But again, I don't think they're safe. We don't think they're safe right now. We you know, as their attorney, Carol, as their psychiatrist, really, we haven't been given access to them. And so there's a lot that we're trying to figure out on the run. Carol's working like a superhero. You know, I'm working like a madman. Like I said, there's shrapnel flying, and we're trying to figure out things. We're trying to protect the children, trying to protect Melody. And it's really a terrible situation. And I think if you're just hearing these things for the first time, you have to be asking yourself, okay, is Melody really crazy? Or did what the children come forward and disclose, is that true? Really, that's two options, right? Either Melody's insane and was coaching the children, or the things that the children came forward and said that Carol outlines in her report, which it's public record, anybody can get it. You know, do kids naturally make up being gang raped by older men? Do kids naturally just kind of say, hey, I'm just pulling out of my head that I was forced to perform oral sex on a bunch of old men? Not really. You know, that's just, I'm just putting it down in the weeds where the grass can eat it, right? So I think those are the two options, really. There's really no in between. And I think all the evidence suggests that Melody is not insane. We had her evaluated by, what is the mechanism to evaluate whether somebody's insane or not? Get an expert to evaluate their mental health. We did that for three people.
Yeah.
Okay? Three people. This is good news, though. There's a bright line into Melody being arrested. People are coming out of the woodwork to me to corroborate what these children are saying. This isn't the end of the story.
Wow.
Now, Carol's, I'm going to tell you what, Carol is angry, some righteous anger. I have some righteous anger, and this is not the end of the story.
Yeah.
Yes. And Sam is a little more generous than I am towards the Hendricks County Child Protective Services. I had a very bad experience. I was Sam gave them my reports, and I tried, I was calling the social worker, the caseworker, tried to get her as soon as we knew that they were there. And the social worker, I had to make three calls before the social worker called me back, and she wouldn't read my report. I asked her if she had read it because, you know, she was wanted to talk. I didn't know what she already knew. And she said, no, I haven't read it. I was dealing with the children yesterday. So I said, okay, but it's 1 o'clock in Indiana now. You didn't read it this morning either? No, and I'm not going to read it.
Wow.
What? And then I wrote to her supervisors. I sent the reports to her and she already had the report, but I sent it to her supervisors as well. I know Sam did too. I didn't know if there were like overlapping supervisors. And so I really don't have a good sense of that they really did the right thing. And that, you know, one of the things I do as an expert is when in child abuse cases is if it's contentious, well, obviously it's contentious if it's in court. And I have done analyses of videotape and transcripts of evaluations of these, you know, supposed forensic evaluations to see what went wrong. Like if they were doing something wrong that prevented a child, that either encouraged a child to make something up or prevented, usually it's that it prevented the child from telling the truth. Mm-hmm. And clearly, I think even if I try to be more generous, clearly they didn't keep in mind, which they should have known, even if they didn't know the whole story of the Bannister family, still, they should have been aware that these children being caught would be less likely to, and they don't know them, and this is all of a sudden they're pushed into this kind of evaluation situation. They should have been more aware that the children wouldn't be necessarily telling everything. They talked about dreams instead of like talking about, you know, all the details that they gave to me. But that you needed to take that into consideration and try to work around that and pick up on signs, verbal and nonverbal, that there's a lot more there that they're not telling because they don't feel comfortable enough to really tell you, you know, these new examiners the truth.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they would have to gain trust. The children automatically don't trust people because of what they've been through. That should feed in there considerably. I have another question for you, Dr. Carroll. Can you tell people the difference between forensic information psychiatry and just regular, and were the children medically evaluated for the abuse that has been alleged as well?
The different, you know, a regular psychiatrist, I mean, I do that as well. A regular or a clinical psychiatrist sees patients and does therapy or gives medication. I'm from the school of thought that doesn't just push pills. I actually only see patients who will do therapy with me weekly. And then if they need meds, I give them meds. But it's treatment oriented. And then a forensic psychiatrist is someone who gets involved in trials or other kinds of aspects of legal cases. And this can involve, you know, the evaluations like of the children or and reading records. I'm, reading drawings. I had the children, actually Melody had brought some drawings from one of the children and I analyzed that. I watched how they handled the anatomically correct dolls. You know, it's a whole, so you still put your psychiatric skills to you, the same psychiatric skills that you would use in treatment, but now you're putting it onto a legal kind of situation.
Got it. And I have one for you too, Sam.
And so according to the police records, Melody has 4 misdemeanors, which are the 4 abductions or kidnappings of her own children, and then 1 felony. And that felony is breaking a court order.
And that's what brought all the marshals.
Breaking a court order is her only felony in the case.
Unreal.
Do they normally send U.S. Marshals for broken court orders? Because if so, they need to go after one of my ex-husbands quite bad.
Wow. Child support. Let's get 20 U.S. Marshals for some bad child support. Yeah,
I could not believe when I found out the only felony is court order and all of this craziness happened.
Yeah, it's insane. This story is insane, and it's a tough case. Because you're going against some prominent people in the community and so-called godly people. And so they're going to have a lot of support there. It's going to be tough.
Yes. I mean, that certainly the 20 marshals and other things that they've done that I'll tell you about show that it's personal. Mm-hmm. It's clearly personal for these sheriffs, cops, whatever, against Melody and... there, and one has to wonder, I don't know the answer to this, but one certainly has to wonder whether they are involved with the same kind of
activity.
Activity or at least the same church, the same teachings, same ritual kinds of things. And I'm not saying that I know for a fact that that's true, but there's something for why they're coming down on Melody so hard rather than doing what the right thing of trying to help the kids. One of the things that I just found out that they did, I just found this out yesterday, is that the police told, you know, at the very beginning, they got together with the National Center for Missing and Abused Children. And they put out a missing poster, and well, they got it not just posters, but all over these posters that these days on the internet, not in the post office, right? Although maybe they put them there too, to try to, you know, missing children, pictures of the children, missing pictures of Melanie, and all of that. And so they were they contacted the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And I just found out yesterday that the Center for Missing and Exploited, et cetera, have been telling like producers of television shows, the media, various media, when they call to ask about this case, that I'm not who I say I am, that I am not a board certified psychiatrist. Now, if you just Google, if you Google the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology, and you can put in any doctor's name, and it tells you whether they're certified or not in their specialty. And so I just did that, and I have tried to send that around to all people who, you know, not all, I mean, I don't know all the media that they sent it to. Fortunately, one media person told us about it. But, you know, this has been probably going on since August. So they're trying to discredit me so that then that will go against Melody's case.
Yeah. And also the mainstream media is only taking his side.
Yes.
Their side. There's no good. There's no real journalism going on in this story whatsoever.
Absolutely.
So that's why we're trying to get it out, you know, as best as we can, you know.
Yeah, you guys are definitely on the cutting edge of this. Y'all put a lot of work into it, which is what we've needed for a long time. So kudos to you. We definitely appreciate it. I think,
yes.
You know, living in hiding, being a fugitive, being an American outlaw, trying to escape powerful people in a human trafficking ring.
Yes.
Yeah, Melody and her children have been disadvantaged about how to tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And so I guess you guys are real heroes for taking the risk and just letting her side of the story be aired. And I think you guys are right. There's a lot of irregularities about the case. Why would Detective Wright from Stafford County be involved in the arrest of Melody in Indiana? Is that normal? Is it normal for a deputy sheriff to be involved? Is that normal? That doesn't seem normal. Right. So there's some high irregularities. I think in the short term, I would just, you know, ask the listening audience to pray for Melody.
Yeah.
To pray for her children. One of the cool things that I find is, as being a believer, a follower of Christ, is that I probably couldn't get access to Donald Trump, President Trump, if I needed a favor, or the governor of Alabama, or even the mayor of my city. But I have access to the throne room of the most powerful person in all of the cosmos, and he hears my prayers. And so I just ask your listening audience, if they're believers in Christ, to go to the throne room of God and petition him for these children, for their protection, for justice to be done, for light to be shown in the darkness.
Amen.
And I just want to mention that we, you know, Sam and I have been working tirelessly. Well, I don't know how tireless, but we've been working very hard. It's very tiring. To get in contact with the kids. We both have been trying that. Also trying with CPS in Indiana and CPS here being Stafford. And we might be making some breakthroughs. I got a call this morning from someone there. I had sent them a whole long email. I sent it to, like, I don't know, 10 or 12 people, any emails I could get that were people who were working for Stafford County DSS. And telling them about, you know, what happened in Indiana and how, why the children weren't telling all the story and why they were suicidal and all of that. And finally, and also then, of course, contacting and then finally, after having sent that, someone this morning called from Stafford DSS. And so there's some light at the end of the tunnel, because, you know, also we're not only are we trying to talk to the kids, like, I want the kids to know that I am there for them. You know, they haven't really seen any other psychiatrist during their whole, you know, being in flight. And so I think it would be comforting for them to see a familiar face or hear a familiar voice, you know, someone who they have told all these things to. So I have been trying. I've been calling the woman who they are with. And, of course, now also telling DSS that they're not safe with that woman because of her connection to the abusers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think they would be safer in another foster home? What is the best thing where the kids can be right now?
Well, Melody would like them to be with her sister, who is in Wisconsin. You know, there might well be problems sending them out of state, but then Melody provided us with a couple of other names of people in Virginia that would be safer than where they are now.
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah, I mean, so in order for this to really get turned around, there's got to be a real investigation. They got to dig in. They got to look at computers. They got to look at hard drives. They got to do all kinds of stuff. And the FBI's got to get involved, and they've got to investigate. That's what really needs to happen. Otherwise, I don't see it going up.
So, yes. And when we were in speaking with Melody, she mentioned, and you may not be able to speak to this, however, whatever limitations there are, we honor those for sure. But she mentioned that her belief is that the police are involved in this. Has there been any evidence of something such as that?
Yeah. In general, I don't want to float conspiracy theories or impinge anybody's character, right, especially a governing authority, yes, without a lot of rock solid evidence. I think things are really odd. Things aren't happening the way you would think the justice system would work. In one sense, there is an end of what justice can be done in this life, and this case stretches the limits of our criminal justice system. It definitely does that. I think there are a lot of people that are untrained and unprepared for somebody from an upper middle class, that's a family, the idyllic, you could put them on a magazine cover family. The husband's an accountant at a prestigious Washington, D.C. law firm. They live 10 minutes from Quantico. There's just no categories for those kind of people doing these kind of bad things. That's another level of scary sophistication and scary. And so I think there's not a lot of, there's people that don't know what to do with it a lot. I think, so there's some law enforcement that they want to go after low hanging fruit. This isn't low hanging fruit. This mm-hmm. is a really tough case against really powerful people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw how difficult it was to get justice in the Epstein case. That's mm-hmm. just an example. And I think just as horrific things have been alleged in this case. And so, I think the FBI does need to probably get involved. I think for the FBI to get involved, there's got to be some additional evidence. They've got to see that Stafford County probably didn't do everything they should have done. I think, like I said, thankfully there's more evidence coming forward, and so we've got some other cards in our hand to play, and we're working very hard to play those cards.
Well, they should also be able to see or want to see the doctor's interviews with the children. I mean, I would imagine so. And then the other thing that we could probably ascertain without being too much of a conspiracy is that the way they arrested her tells me, or it seems like, this was personal. The things that they said to her, the way they treated her. She said that they broke the window, and she felt like the cop was going to pull her out of the window. Now, ultimately, he did not. He opened the door, got her to the ground, started bending her right arm and hurting her. And
threw a cell phone in her face and said, you want to call Sam now?
And then, you want to call Sam now? And then the one says, hey, you remember me? And so it's personal.
Yeah. That's not professional. That's certainly not professional. So
all of that needs to be investigated,
I want to ask you too, Sam, do you know, if there was supposedly an investigation into the father and the grandfather, and they were cleared of all charges, why does he now have an attorney? What is the attorney that he has now? Ms. White, are you familiar with her at all?
I don't know what her role is right now. I think there was some communication with me while the Alabama Protection from Abuse case was active. We probably communicated two or three times. And so I don't know what her current role is.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just wondering if she's a criminal attorney, if she's like a family, I'm assuming family law and that kind of stuff. Just trying to get a background on her too.
So in your opinion, guys, what's the best way that our supporters can support you guys in this effort? I know that there's a change.org out there. I did a video yesterday and threw that out there. I think there's 46,000 signatures already, close to 47. That's a lot in only 5 or 6 days. Pretty impressive. A lot of people. It's out there. The story's out there, and I believe it's going to go national.
Well, but as you said, the one side is out there. Mm-hmm. I had Sam and Jill Jones Soderman on my radio show. I'm sure you came across that. But other than that, in terms of telling her story, and there was a good article in the Indy paper through USA Today. But other than that, I mean, that was kind of in connection to her having been arrested. But other than that, there really hasn't yet been anything. Yeah. And if the Center for Missing and Exploited Children keeps telling them that I'm not a real psychiatrist, then, you know.
Which is not their place to do anyway. That has nothing to do with, they're completely overstepping boundaries there.
Yeah, just really.
They said that it was, this was told to them by the detective, right? But it doesn't matter. They should have, checked these things themselves.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, people need to do their own due diligence. Yes. And so that's why we're getting out this side of the story. And so anybody, other creators out there that want to reproduce any of my stuff when it comes to this story and monetize it, you're welcome to do it. No problem. We want to get this out there to as many people, you know.
Sam, do you have any last words that you'd like to share?
No, I think you guys have covered it. I think they're just, you know, in general, big picture, there needs to be more awareness that of the prevalence of this kind of thing. Victims need to feel like, you know, they can come forward. There is a process. We need child protective services and law enforcement to have human trafficking, familial human trafficking, you know, more on their radar of competence. You know, this case has been a big eye-opener for me, and I've gotten involved in other situations. There are very real cults out there that are preying on children, and it's usually very powerful people. And so we need courageous people out there to shine the light in the darkness. So thanks for what you're doing. If anybody feels like they want to help or they have information, you know, they can contact me. My law firm is McClurelaw.com, McClurelaw.com. And all my contact information is there. I'd be happy to speak with and interface with anyone who thinks that.
Yeah. And Sam got back to me immediately, as did Dr. Lieberman. Thank you both for getting back to me in such a timely manner, too. Dr. Lieberman, did you have any last words you'd like to share before we close?
Well, just I would like to underline what you were just both saying, that I think more light needs to be shown on this case. And when people do hear all the facts, they can get it more easily, how it obviously is personal, how, you know, there are so many things that show that went wrong. And I think the more people who hear the story and realize that something needs to be done, the more pressure the judicial system, the child protective services, all of that will feel to do the right thing. And if people want to get in touch with me, they can as well through my expert witness website, which is expertwitnessforensicpsychiatrist.com.
Awesome. Excellent. Yes. And I got in touch with you through the radio show, the podcast, where you were actually talking to Jill Jones-Soderman and Sam. It was an excellent interview as well.
We've actually interviewed her before.
And we have interviewed Jill, yes. So thank you guys again so much for taking time out of your day. We're hoping that we can get more people to know the truth and to protect those babies and Melody the best that we can.
Yeah, and love to have you guys back on as things progress, and so we can get updated on what's going on. Give all our subscribers an update as well. God bless you both. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you guys. Have a great day.